Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe, everyone. This is your host, Doug Kelly. It is April 30th, Thursday. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. How are you doing tonight? Welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us.
Yes, it is. And we have Jeff Hilling with us tonight from PattersonFilm.com. And we're going to be talking about the famous Bigfoot film that's taken back in 67, I believe, by Roger Patterson?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. So anyway, we're going to be talking about that coming up in just a couple of minutes here. Just want to take care of some housekeeping stuff. If you'd like to call in tonight and ask our guest questions, ask us questions, you're more than welcome to. You can use that click the chat button on your screen there if you're listening live, or you can give us a call on any landline at 347-945-7799. I'll put that in the chat room. And you can also certainly go into the chat room and ask questions in the chat room, and we'll be able to take those too. So that's a good thing. Just wanted to update everybody a little bit on some of the different things we've got going on at Paranexus.org. We are very, very, very close to finishing the first phase of our registry database of anomalous events. Mike Jones, who's the lead developer on that, and we've been doing battle with script, but today we have prevailed. We have won. We beat the script demons, and they're no longer. So, I mean, we were fighting a couple of pages for really funky reasons. So we are going to be deploying that, it looks like, before the next radio show next week. So the next few days, be looking for announcement, and we're going to be looking for some beta testers. So got some reports you'd like to submit, whether they're parapsychological slash haunting investigation reports, if you've got UFO sightings, even abduction reports, we'd love to have you help us do some testing on that. And so if you're interested in helping us, just shoot me an email at admin@paranexus.org and let me know you're interested in the beta testing phase. And then we will contact you in the next few days and let you know, hey, it's there. Here's a link. Go give it a shot. Upload. You'll be able to upload images, some videos, some audios, and it's going to be cool. So that's just one of the things. So we've been talking about that. And, of course, as we deploy that, we're also going to be taking applications for the Paranexus Certified Field Investigator Program, the CPFI program, where we're going to have field investigators throughout the states, throughout the world, if you will, and be able to take cases as they come in to Paranexus, and we're going to really be pushing that, trying to get more cases. You can be an individual to be a CPFI. You can even have your own team. It doesn't matter, and you just will need to apply. We've already got some indications of interest from several individuals, so we'll be contacting them shortly, but it's an exciting time. Big changes with Paranexus. A couple of other things that we've got in the works right now. We have a Parapedia, if you will. It's kind of like a Wikipedia thing. It's actually installed and ready to go. It's not hard-linked right now on Paranexus, but it will be just as soon as we find somebody who would like to coordinate that and administer that. Now, right now, the way it's set up, if you are a Paranexus certified, non-certified member, or a consultant, and of course staff, you will have access to edit and update and add articles and content. And so that's another reason to join Paranexus. We'd love to have you as a member. So if you're interested in and you really like the Wikipedia type of thing, we have an exact duplicate of the site, and we're calling it the Paranexus Parapedia. If you have any interest in that or any experience with that, join Paranexus staff as a volunteer and kind of coordinate that and oversee it. We'd love to hear from you. Again, shoot me, Doug Kelly, an email at admin@paranexus.org, and let's talk. We'd love to have you. Speaking of positions, Grant, we're also looking for a newsletter editor. If you have some experience with that or just want to hone your experience, we're looking for somebody with some good writing skills, some good desktop publishing skills for that. And the last bit of information that I want to share with you is we are, of course, looking for ways to fund Paranexus. We're taking a very, very hard look at forming a nonprofit corporation in the upcoming months. We're looking at nonprofit status. We are we're moving that way, and we're always looking for ways to fund the organizations to fund research. And so one of the things that we're going to deploy here in just the next few days, probably this weekend, is a new website, and we're calling it parabids.com. It's an eBay alternative. The fees are so much lower than eBay, and it doesn't cost really anything to list an item. eBay will charge you. And the cool thing is we're going to give you a couple of buck credit to your account after it's all works out to kind of get you started. So be on the lookout for Parabids, and we'll announce that in the next couple of days. We're just doing some final configurations on the site right now. Kind of an exciting thing. It's really an eBay that's focused on the paranormal community. So you can sell anything you want on it, but it's going to be a focus on equipment, metaphysical stuff, everything that's used in paranormal research. So hopefully we'll get some interest in that, especially because it's going to be ridiculously low.
Exciting. Paranexus is doing some really, really neat things, and it's going to be a really cool ride.
Yeah, it is.
Really looking forward to it.
And we've got other things we're working on, too, to make membership in Paranexus a lot more attractive. One of them that we're currently working on, too, is an email service where members can get their own Paranexus.net email account, which will have some good features to it as well. So we've got things in the works. We're trying to make Paranexus something that people will find value in and join the vision and get involved and network and share and, let's figure this stuff out. So having said all that, one of the things that we are intrigued about is, of course, cryptozoology. And the biggest part of, I think, of cryptozoology, at least in most people's minds, is the whole Bigfoot thing. And so tonight we're going to talk about the famous Patterson film. And we have, as tonight, Jeff Hilling, hailing from the boondocks of northern Minnesota. Is that right, Jeff?
Yes, it is.
And welcome. Yeah, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Thank you.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about yourself. I did not get the bio, and I know you sent it in, but I didn't get it or can't find it. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and let's just tell everybody that the website is PattersonFilm.com. So if you want to go take a look at that while we're chatting here, PattersonFilm.com. But tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into this whole Roger Patterson thing.
Well, sure. I've been fascinated with the Patterson film ever since I was a young lad. Back in the 70s, you would see the Patterson film footage pretty much all over the place on television. In Search of did a service for that film especially. Leonard Nimoy talking about the Patterson film, and ever since then I've been quite fascinated. I've read several books, probably at least a dozen, on the Patterson film and Bigfoot in general. And what I have done is I've developed a website strictly in honor and also studying the Patterson film. I mean, you can go to any Bigfoot website out there, they'll always mention the Patterson film, but this one's really devoted pretty much to just the whole Patterson film in general. It's in its infant stages. It's starting to grow some pretty good popularity, but we're adding more stuff all the time as soon as we get it on there. So this will be built into almost a Patterson film home, if you will.
That's cool. It's a nice site. In fact, Jeff had applied for a Paranexus Award for his site, which we gave him a gold award here a week or two ago, and that's displayed proudly. And, I mean, it's a nice website. It really is. He's done a great job. And thanks for sending me your bio, Jeff. I just got it.
Yeah. No problem.
No, not later. No, it wasn't you. I know you'd send it in. I'm looking at this. This says the website takes a unique neutral approach to dealing with the facts, legends, and rumors surrounding this most controversial film footage. And you state that you're about 80% convinced that Patterson film footage is genuine. So what's holding you back? What is it that's got you scratching your head?
Well, it's always the obvious thing that I wasn't there. None of us were actually there, so therefore there's always a shadow of doubt. And, you know, this is an amazing piece of film, so therefore you have to have at least some form of skepticism when you go into something like this. But the overwhelming evidence seemed to me to point to a genuine Bigfoot. But I'm also open to the possibility that, yes, indeed, it could be a hoax. Recently, Bob Hieronymus has been outed out of the Bigfoot closet from a gentleman, can't remember his name, he just wrote a book a few years back talking about how he was the man in the costume.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Hieronymus was the first person to claim that, nor do I think he's going to be the last person to claim that, to be quite honest. Probably in the next 10 or 20 years, probably somebody else will come out. Much beyond that, somebody's going to be pretty old to be claiming that, I would assume. You know, the era's kind of come and gone, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Bob Gimlin's getting old, so, you know, the mystery is going to die one of these days, and unless there's a deathbed confession, you know, I don't know how much more information will ever be revealed about it.
Well, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Well, you go ahead, Grant.
I was just going to say, Jeff, maybe for the benefit of our audience, I'd find it in this day and age difficult to believe that nobody would be familiar with the Patterson tape. But for the sake of argument, let's assume somebody out there isn't. So can you kind of tell our audience what the Patterson tape was all about? You know,
sure.
What occurred?
Patterson film, I mean, if they're not familiar with it by name, I'm almost certain they'd be familiar with it by the image.
Yeah, for sure.
But, film you see, anytime anybody mentions Bigfoot or you see an image, you Google an image search on Bigfoot, it's going to be that 1967 either film footage or picture footage of a hairy man-like beast roaming through the wilderness of Northern California. And everybody must have seen the picture. It's been on T-shirts and, you know, magazine covers, books. It's a phenomenal picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a pop cultural icon. I even explain that in my website, PattersonFilm.com.
Now Patterson was, he had been actually hunting for Bigfoot, correct? He was familiar with the area. He had hired a guide, and they had been on, this wasn't the first time they were out in the woods, and it was in the Pacific Northwest, correct?
Yes, you are correct. He wrote a book a couple years before, I think it came out about a year before, entitled Do Abominable Snowmen in America Exist? And it was a self-published paperback. So he had been hunting and trying to discover Bigfoot for a number of years previous to the actual film.
Mm-hmm. And so he had the camera, he had everything with him, and was he actually doing the filming, or was that the guy who was with him?
That was actually Roger Patterson who did film it. Bob mm-hmm. Gimlin was allegedly on the horse next to him. Apparently supposedly had happened, according to Roger and Bob's story, is that the horse had bucked up when they saw the man-beast roaming through the woods. Roger Patterson had started his film camera, which was a Kodak 16mm film. This was at the tail end of his reel. So he had roughly about a minute or so left. And he allegedly what happened, he bucked up, the horse did. Roger basically fell off the horse, or the horse had fallen too, depending on which story you read. Things change a little bit, and their memories aren't the best after things like that happen. And he had stabilized himself behind a log and tried to get the best footage he could of it. So it is very shaky at the beginning, and you can tell, obviously, there's some scrambling going on at the beginning of the film when they start filming it, and it does stabilize shortly thereafter.
Well, to me, that always kind of lent more to the legitimate, you know, because it didn't seem so contrived, if you know, especially at the very beginning. But, you know, the photographic evidence in that film is really amazing. And it's undergone a lot of analyzation, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The amazing part of the film is that, you know, Roger Patterson back in the late 1960s, you know, some people say this was a hoax. Well, I don't think he really understood what kind of scrutiny his film would be put through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he could have had the foresight to see the technology coming down the pipeline of what a 16-millimeter film could be put through as far as analysis.
Absolutely.
The Patterson film is the second most analyzed film in the world, next to the Zapruder Kennedy assassination film.
Mm. Yeah.
Some people don't realize that. So people have really looked at this thing forward, backwards, blown it up, digitized it, stabilized it, done recreations, reenactments, and still it has withstood the test of all these tests. Worst case scenario, people say it's inconclusive. Best case scenario, they will say it is absolutely authentic, depending on who's doing the analysis and what type of analysis they're doing.
Well, Jeff Melman, the professor in at Boise in Idaho, he believes it's real.
Yeah, there are a lot of credible scientists, people who are into zoology, cryptozoology, people who know a lot about gait, movement, stabilization, filming. You really need a culmination of all these types of people looking at this film, because not everybody's an expert in every one of these aspects of science.
Well, you know, the thing that I think that one of the most intriguing things about that film is that I'm inclined to think that that's a legitimate film. And the reason why I'm inclined to believe so is because of the actual physiological movements of that creature, because they're more ape-like than they are human. Everything from its stature, the way that its whole locomotion is way off, the way it turns its head, and it's just so remarkably unhuman that, and it's so blatant, it's hard to deny it. I don't think anybody in a suit could duplicate that.
Right, it's difficult to duplicate, and you know, the image back then, the thing is, it at first glance it could go either way. The first time you ever saw it, it was shown pretty much in its proper ratio aspect. Nowadays, when you see it, you know, you get on YouTube. I have a copy of it on my website, going through YouTube as well. You know, you see a blown up version. The aspect ratio has always been blown up on this when you see it nowadays. But back then, you see it on TV. It was actually from a pretty good distance in the film. Ways away. You don't really see that one anymore because you're looking at mainly wilderness and the creature walking far away. So what you're seeing nowadays is a blown up, centered version just focusing right on the creature itself.
And, you know, that creature's moving along at a really good clip in the woods. You know, I don't know about you guys, but if I was in a monkey suit, I'm not so sure I'd want to be running through the woods. And, I mean, you know, the way that animal just walks its way through there, it's moving. And it's very acutely aware that it has company.
Now, keep in mind, there is some debate on the shutter speed on a camera. That's something that I don't know if we'll ever know. There are some experts that claim the shutter speed was what Roger Patterson claimed, and therefore it has to be something other than a human. I think it was a Russian scientist who initially made that claim shortly thereafter. He did his analysis based on, you know, the distance from the camera to the creature, allegedly, and all these mathematical formulas, you know, how they do it. Mm-hmm. But that is something they claim was authentic as far as the shutter speed that Roger claimed. That's one of the debates. But, you know, these things are, have been blown up through the years. And what has happened to the film is it's actually, the more you blow it up and the more it's been analyzed, the funny thing is the more intriguing it becomes. Whereas a fake, if it were a fake, you know, your average hoax or fake or anything that's a counterfeit, usually the more you analyze it, the quicker it falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a counterfeit $20 bill, you know, it might look real at first, or, you know, you might not think anything of it, but as soon as you start doing some analysis to it, it quickly falls apart. You know, you rub a little marker on it, it shows itself to be fake, or you put it under a microscope, hold it up to the light. Those are the types of things you do when you're analyzing something. Well, the Patterson film, the more it's been analyzed, the more it seems to hold its ground.
That's good. So let's go into your take on it. Let's get that out on the table. What?
Well, I do have a bit of an interesting take. Well, okay, let's just go with me on this. I'm currently writing a book on it. Cool. I don't know when it's going to be out, later this year. He posted the website, and you'll be the first to know.
Oh, well, let us know. We'll have you on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I'll give you a call again.
We'd be honored.
And what it's going to do is it's going to explain this a little bit better. Okay, let's pretend it is a fake film. Let's pretend they got a monkey suit. I mean, there's a lot of problems in my estimation. You can even say it's Bob Hieronymus in there if you want. One of the problems with it what I'll do is I'll explain what I think about it first, okay?
Sure.
If it was a fake film, I would still be fascinated with it, and I think everybody else should be too if they think about it. And that's kind of my interesting take on it. The reason they should be fascinated with it is it's probably the greatest illusion that has ever existed, ever.
Huh. All right, so we're assuming that it's fake. And it's still a fascinating film. Okay, so tell us why, assuming it's faked, that it's so fascinating.
Well, because it is an illusion, a magic trick, if you will, that we know the answer to, but yet we cannot perform the trick again. Think about it this way. BBC put out a lot of time, a lot of money, some of your best Hollywood-style creators of special effects and suits about 10 years ago. I think it was 96 or something. They set out to recreate the Patterson film in a sense.
Yep, I think I saw that.
And they failed miserably. They didn't even get close. And whereas the Patterson film, you have muscle movements, you have actual breasts on this creature, you have a gait on this creature that hasn't been replicated. I put a picture of it on my website, PattersonFilm.com, and you can see. I said it looked like Chaka from Land of the Lost. They did a good job of recreating it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even close to what was in the Patterson film. Now, I don't expect it to be exact. I mean, you know, everything's going to be a little bit different if you make something trying to look like it. But these are professionals. That's what they do for a living. They couldn't get the job done. These are with materials, techniques, science that wasn't available back in 1967 to your average rodeo star. And that's what Roger Patterson was. He wasn't a costume maker. So the Patterson film itself, if it is a fake, you've got to say this is the most amazing illusion ever. And that's why it should be fascinating, even if Bob Gimlin comes on his deathbed and he says, yeah, the whole thing was a hoax. Well, we still don't have the answer of how it was hoaxed. And I don't
know. And, you know, but maybe it was just a matter of, if that would be the case, it's just a matter of trick of light and the way that things occurred on that particular day, like, you know, like an oil painting. And so,
exactly.
How are you ever going to do anything different?
You know, it's almost like, well, it was the right place, the right time, the right suit, the right person in it. There's just too many factors involved for this not to be amazing. It's like a magician telling you, well, long ago, this man performed. You saw it on a film. Nobody to this day can perform that magic trick, even though he told you how to do it and told you it was a trick. But nobody can do it. Why not? I mean, if you think about it in that regards, it'll blow your mind. You got to kind of sit down and think about it like that for a while.
But if that's indeed the case, and I'm just playing devil's advocate now,
sure.
If that was indeed the case, what did they stand to, or how did they stand to profit from it? Did the Patterson, he hung on to that film for years and years. He didn't sell it out, did he? Well, I guess maybe he did, because it was all over the place on TV in the 70s.
I think his wife owns part of the rights to the actual film, and a guy under the name of Root. The name somebody or other had owned it. I'm not sure who owns the other half right now, but Mrs. Patterson, I think, is the controlling party of the actual film. But I don't think she markets it very, you don't see a lot of things marketed from it, so I don't know what she's really making off of it.
Refresh my memory, Jeff. When Patterson took the film, okay, because I was about 17 when that happened, but I don't remember, seeing a lot of publicity about it right in 67. Did it come out in 67, or did he hold off for a while and come out later?
Well, it was pretty much an underground film right after it was released. He had actually toured around. I got some clips, if you look on my historic Bigfoot article, it's part of my website, that shows some actual newspaper ads for his film. They're pretty fascinating. He shows, basically, he goes into these little venues, these little film places for 4 or 5 days, I guess, and he did a presentation with it, shows some other type of film footage he had made, and then he showed the Patterson film as kind of the coup de grace of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he was doing shortly thereafter. Yeah, it really didn't make the media, though. I think a lot of people were skeptical of it. I think it was getting shopped around to various scientists who really didn't know what to make of it, especially back then when the enhancement technology really wasn't there. And then in the 70s, I think what really set it off again was the In Search Of series
from
gathered from my research. And just from my memory, I mean, I was a young kid back then, but it was pretty much once that hit, I mean, everything was Bigfoot. He's on the $6 million man. He's on the Bionic Woman. He's on the Lovestock. He's on T-shirts and toys.
Yeah, he's
and,
a cultural icon now, just like the image of an alien.
Absolutely. He did for... Bigfoot, what the Roswell incident did for the people in the aliens. So it really lit the fire. There was nothing before the Patterson film as far as Bigfoot, as far as any kind of pop cultural items or books. There was very little.
But the biggest knock against the whole film is the fact that they said that this was a guy in a monkey suit, that they were doing the Planet of the Apes at the time, and one of the suits was stolen. That was the guy you just talked about, wasn't it? Can't remember, Hermonius or whatever his name was?
Bob Hieronymus, yeah.
There
was a couple people involved in the whole story of Bigfoot, and I go into the cast of characters on my website as well.
Uh-huh.
One of them was Philip Morris, who is a great costume maker, but he makes commercial great costumes. For the public, basically. And the other was Mr. Chambers, who was working on Planet of the Apes at the time. Now, some people said that he was the only man talented enough possibly to make that that costume. And I can't remember. I think it was John Landis who had allegedly outed John Chambers from the, saying that everybody in Hollywood knows he made that costume. Well, mm-hmm. Mr. Chambers denied it, so I don't know what
yeah.
you need from. So I would pretty much rule him out for the most part. And as far as Mr. Morris goes, Philip Morris, I think it was Nickelodeon about 10 years ago. No, that was more recent. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. Had done a special with Bob Hieronymus shortly after that book came out. Philip Morris appeared in that book as well, claiming that he was the maker of that costume back when in 1967 and sold it to Roger Patterson. And this is something he's doing from memory. Now, I don't know about you. I can't remember business transactions I did that long ago.
I'm lucky if I can remember at the end of the week.
Well, that's suspect, too. I mean, it's suspect because, it would be so cool at this late date to say, by the way, I made the costume and I mean, it's like, you know, I write a book about it. Come on, there's an obvious credibility issue simply because he stands to profit.
Yeah, he was in the book that this guy who brought Hieronymus out, he was kind of tapped down toward the end claiming this, but he was also in this series special where they'd actually put Bob Hieronymus back in a monkey suit, made him walk again. And this costume they put on was done by Philip Morris. Well, I'm sorry.
It didn't match up.
Pardon me?
I said it didn't match up. I've seen how all those play out. And, boy, you can't hold a candle to the way the original film came out.
No, it looked like if you ever been to a high school basketball game, you had a mascot or a bear. That's what it reminded me of, as far as the gait and the movement and the way the costume looked. I mean, this wasn't even close. It was sad. That's the only way I can describe it. It was, you know, if the Patterson film was a passing grade, and this thing probably I would give about a 17. You know, it was really poorly done. You know, these things cannot be thrown together with cheap suits.
Yeah, and I think the most convincing thing is the gait. The gait of the animal. I saw, I can't recall what channel it was on, and maybe the same documentary you saw, where they had an athlete, and they put him on it, made him pose in the same angle with the same type of, you know, bends and flexibility in certain spots. That replicated the actual Patterson tape. And this guy was an athlete in tip-top shape, and he couldn't do it because of the mechanics of his physiology. And I think that's what distinguished us from him. Whatever it was more ape-like than human. And its locomotion was more, you know, was more ape-like than, certainly more ape-like than human.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was something, like I said, if that was a hoax, I mean, there was something amazing.
They got real lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, they put an ape suit on a human, and all of a sudden they magically turned into Bigfoot for a minute. And then,
right, yeah. So
what's the way I could explain it? He went through some sort of a morphing or transformation. That's what I mean by when I say if that was a fake, it's more amazing than it actually being a Bigfoot itself, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's assume that it is. Let's assume for a moment that it's real. What makes it real? What are the factors that suggest it's a real thing?
Well, the more it's been analyzed and blown up, the more detail it's actually been revealed. That's the amazing thing about this footage. You go on YouTube and you can watch what I call blob squatch all day long. You see these grainy pictures taken on somebody's cell phone or a cheap digital camera, an old camcorder, VHS. You can't analyze that kind of thing. You can't make out. There could be a real Bigfoot right in front of you. The cameras nowadays just cannot hold a candle to using an old 16-millimeter film footage where it can actually be blown up and analyzed. So what has happened throughout the years, it's been digitized, analyzed, and you see muscle movement. This is something that was not revealed back in the 70s when it was being shown on In Search Of and things like that. You're seeing ripples of muscle. You're seeing you see the side view of the breasts of this creature. You see facial details that are startling. They're horrifying if you ask me. You look at them and I don't know, there's something mesmerizing about that film.
And this creature was most likely female.
Yeah, you see breasts on it, which is, to me, is another factor that I would say would be in favor of not a hoax, because who's going to buy a musky, you know, monkey suit and try to modify the breasts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it,
or make it into a female. I mean, that's.
They didn't even have ratings on the movies then, so that, you know, they not bare-breasted at the time. That wouldn't have been socially acceptable.
Why would you do that? I mean,
yeah,
you wouldn't have to. I mean, if it had a flat chest, nobody would have shown. I mean, you wouldn't see any of the sexual organs, if there were any or anything. You know, he was kind of walking from behind or at a slight sideward angle for most of the film. You wouldn't have to put those on there, and it's not that easy, folks. If you think about it, if you've ever tried to alter or sew a piece of clothing, let alone a monkey suit like that.
Well, that's the other thing too, Jeff. Those breasts, or that breast, when she moves and she's like in stride, you can see that breast moves the way that it would on a body. It just the way that it kind of compresses itself and then releases it with the muscle contractures and stuff. That looks absolutely natural. It looks like a female gorilla.
Yeah, and that's really amazing. I mean, the more you analyze it, just think about it for a couple minutes. You're looking at something, either way, if you believe it's real or hoax, it's still amazing. It's
phenomenal. Yeah. And I don't know any latex that looks that good.
Bigfoot boobies, all right.
There you go.
Okay, so the muscle movement's one thing. What else about it makes it real? Suggested.
Sure. I just wanted to point out, too, Philip Morris. Okay, this guy's a professional costume maker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who claimed he sold this Bigfoot costume, and you know, Roger Patterson allegedly modified it back in 67 and put Bob Hieronymus in it to walk around in it. Okay, think about this. This is something that I've never heard argued either. Roger Patterson modified a suit made by a professional costume maker, and he made it better than professional costume maker. How's that for you? I mean, in a sense, Philip Morris kind of, you know, basically said, I'm a lousy costume maker. This guy is a rodeo, you know, horse rider. You know, he made a better costume than I did, in a sense, is what he's, in a sense, alluding to.
That's a good
point. I think is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So what else about the... Sorry? Go ahead, Jeff.
I said, just think about that for a little bit. It's kind of one of those things that's never been pointed out that I've heard of.
Well, that's a good point, actually. So what else about the film suggests it's real?
Well, you have a lot of evidence, too, that's never been disproven from it as far as people analyzing it, scientists looking at the movement, the gait. A couple other things that are strange about the whole incident. If you were going to fake footage, you're Roger Patterson, why would you go all the way to Northern California? There have been plenty of Bigfoot sightings up in Washington area where he was originally from. That's where Bob Gimlin was from. That's also where Bob Hieronymus is from. So that is one thing that kind of lends credibility to the film, if you ask me. I think he was actually out there looking in that area for a Bigfoot. They'd allegedly seen him. I mean, in Washington, if you're going to fake a footage and go through all this trouble, I don't see why you have to go so far away, for one.
Yeah.
You can do it in your own backyard, essentially.
Well, they're all out in California in the Pacific Northwest, so yeah, that's a good point.
Here's a question from the chat room.
Historically, in Washington as well. So, I mean, you could.
Oh, yeah, the whole area.
Yeah.
Here's a question from the chat room, Jeff. Johnny Sarasota says, we're seeing more wild animals in cities because of our growth. Why are we not getting more sightings of these creatures?
I don't know if I can answer that because I try to stick pretty much with Pattersonville, but I will talk about Bigfoot, of course. One reason could be is that maybe we are. I mean, if people ever thought of that, I mean, a lot of these people claim we see Bigfoot in these somewhat civilized areas. I mean, a lot of the footage you see nowadays comes from people's own backyard, in a sense. So
you're right.
The problem is the video footage we're seeing nowadays, it really doesn't hold up to much analysis either way. It's tough to prove or disprove. See a Bigfoot in your backyard, you grab for your, 5-point megapixel digital camera. Well, you know, I mean, you're looking at something, you know, maybe 50 yards away. It's really not going to be able to hold up to much analysis, even if it were a real Bigfoot.
Well, and I think
reports all the time from people in somewhat populated areas that they see Bigfoot.
You're right, and there are reports of Bigfoot and Sasquatches in populated areas. But here's another point that occurs to me. You know, you're talking about how good the Patterson film footage is, and it is, and yet here we are in a day and age of prolific camcorders, cameras, and all of that, and yet nobody has managed to come up with any really decent footage, even researchers who are out there looking for him, or for the creature. How do you explain that?
Yeah, that is troublesome. It's possible this creature is more few and far between than once thought.
Or smarter than we give it credit for.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Or smarter, you know, if it may be a lot smarter. You know, if it can coexist with us and remain undetected as a great ape or a close relative of humans, that in itself is pretty remarkable.
Yes, it is. It's very remarkable.
I mean, you don't find bodies, you don't find anything. So,
but don't find bodies of dead bears when they're out and about as well.
This is true. That's right.
Apparently,
that's
they
right.
go somewhere to die and then they rot pretty quick.
Or they bury their dead.
Yeah, they could do that too. You never know. I mean, we don't know if this thing's human or animal.
Yep.
Or if it could be a hoax. You know, I'm not dismissing that possibility either.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying we're just looking at all the angles, all the possibilities on my website, and we're trying to get to the bottom of it.
Well, you know, we had Scott Marlowe on our show a couple of weeks ago, Jeff, and Scott, you know, what I really like, you know, the fact that he points out, or what I like so much about when it comes on the show is he points out the fact that, you know, there were more than one kind of hominid existing at one time in the, you know, evolutionary history of man. And a lot of people completely lose sight of that, or they have no idea. They think it was like ape, man, you know. And you know, we coexisted with a lot of different hominids, and why we came out on top, and who's to say we really did come out on top, there may be other species that are similar to us. It's very interesting.
Nobody really knows what creature is. You mentioned ape. Now, in a sense, it does. It's got really dark fur. It's got a head that is cone-shaped, much like the mountain gorilla, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at all the other aspects, it actually looks human. It has a human-like nose that you don't see on gorillas of any sort. The legs are human-like. The arms are human-like. Yeah, they're longer than humans, but they're still human-like. It's got hands like a human. If you look at a gorilla's hands and feet and legs, they really don't look like what left in film back in 1967. It's almost like some sort of a strange man beast. I theorized it could possibly be a wild man. There was a lot of wild man reports back in the olden days, especially I got a lot of them on my website. The historic articles talks about all these wild man sightings. And I also allude to a specific disease where hair could cover the body. What if somebody mm-hmm. was ostracized from a tribe of people back when?
Mm-hmm.
They had to go out and live on their own. Maybe they bred with other people like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of strange theories about Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very interesting phenomena, you know, because one thing I find also intriguing about it is a lot of the Native Americans also, you know, in the Northwest and all throughout North American continent have it as part of their culture. It's in their culture, and, you know, the way they're, because of their cultural perspective, they approached it totally differently than the white man did, and they just said, I think in most of the cases, well, he's the guy that lives in the woods, and he doesn't bother us, so we're not going to bother him. You know?
Absolutely. Native Americans have known about Bigfoot for a long time.
So maybe they came over, maybe they came over the Bering Straits with us, you know, or who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I say on my website, I have articles on their classic articles dealing with Indians speaking about Bigfoot. You can read them articles, newspaper articles, probably from the turn of the century around that time, Indians claiming they're a lost tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a possibility, too. Who knows? The Indians were out in the woods a lot more than the settlers were. They've been there a long time, and they probably know things that we don't know about Bigfoot.
Hey, Jeff, an interesting thing's come up in the chat room about this lady in Tennessee who claimed that this Bigfoot would come to her house and ask for garlic, you know, with very rudimentary English. And, you know, have you heard of that? Or I know that was on a documentary here in the last few years.
I think I saw the same one of you. I think I've seen everyone ever made.
Yeah. Any
yeah,
talk?
I don't know. I think that. I mean, you know, I was on, I think it was the Exxon radio show a couple of weeks ago, and Rob McConnell was asking me about what do you make of all these claims of people, you know, claiming to be friends with Bigfoot, and, you know, they communicate with them. And I said, well, hey, I know people who, you know, are hippies, they smoke mushrooms, and they claim to hang out with Bigfoot every other weekend. I didn't put much credibility in what they say. You know, you got to kind of take people at you know, who knows the source? I mean, you don't know what these people are on, what they're doing.
Well, that's true. You know, we've talked so much.
Somewhat skeptical. I don't believe in being too skeptical, and I don't believe in not being skeptical at all. I think either way, you wind up in the wrong place.
Well, you know, the whole thing about Bigfoot is I remember first finding out about it when I was a young kid. My dad brought home, like, an Argosy magazine about 58 or 59 when he was out there throwing oil drums around at a construction site. And, you know, we were just like an ape man, you know, running around, except he was a lot taller. And so, you know, it's something that's always kind of very intriguing from the standpoint that who really knows what's going on out there. But the most amazing part to me is how, if you read different accounts of encounters, no matter what website you go on, I know this will resonate with you, Jeff, is there's consistencies in some of these stories that it's just like, wow, why would people keep making this up?
Yeah, I mean, if it is all a hoax, there sure are a lot of people making up a story about it, I'll tell you that much.
And the other thing that gets me, too, is how he's not aggressive with people. You know, there's been instances where you...
Although I do have a couple articles. You got to read through some of these articles I got on PattersonFilm.com. Some of them actually, one of them actually claimed they were allegedly killed by this beast. Now, this was probably in the late 1800s, so take it for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
But right.
Modern times, for the most part, anytime there's any stories about encounters, yeah, we've not heard of any deadly encounters. In the most part, it seems to almost be happening what we see in the Patterson film, which is a shy beast kind of just trying to get out of it, really.
Let me ask you a question about the Patterson film. And, you know, I forget who brought this up. On one of the cryptozoology websites, somebody was talking about actually seeing two other Bigfoots to the right in the same direction that this Bigfoot was going, a child or a juvenile Bigfoot and then a male. Have you ever heard that? Or
you're speaking within the Patterson film itself?
Yes,
right?
Yes. They claim that toward the end of it, as the female is moving, you know, toward the direction off to the right, that there's actually two other creatures, one a juvenile, that she's heading toward in the shadows there. Have you ever heard that or looked at that specifically?
I've heard that, and I've heard similar things like that. There's a gentleman I was actually debating on Tom Biscardi's show once. And he was talking about at one point there was he saw Bob Gimlin in the background of the film in the woods. There's theories that there was a Bigfoot massacre. The man who gave us the stabilization, M.K. Davis, claimed also at an event allegedly that there was some sort of possibly a massacre going on. There's blood in the background. You can see a spine of a Bigfoot. And there are so many crazy theories, in my opinion, about this film. There's just no end to them. And one thing you got to realize is that people are overanalyzing this film, trying to find any little film enigma they find in there, and then basing the whole theory off of it. That's ridiculous. I think they're just trying to sell books or gain popularity, get something new sparked in this or something. But you got to look at it as a film. And also when you blow it up, you see a small enigma somewhere. I mean, you can blow up pictures. It's relatively good footage to begin with. Start blowing things up, 60, 70 times what they're originally intended to be, you're going to see enigmas in everything.
And or you're going to see patterns, either enigmas or patterns.
Absolutely. Now, you got to look at it as a motion picture. It's not a single picture you're looking at, which a lot of these people finding these enigmas find in one single frame. You got to look at it as a motion picture. Once you start looking at it as a motion picture, these enigmas quickly disappear. So keep that in mind when you're blowing up the film trying to do amateur analysis.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You're going to find what you look for. But, like you said earlier, and like we've talked about so often on this program, you really have to approach this with an open mind and see what you've got. See what it shows. And, there's the muscle movement, there's the gait, there's also the arm length. Those are all factors. And I think the biggest thing is that occurred to me earlier, and it's been brought up in the chat room, is that where's the suit? John West in the chat room talked about, nobody's ever come forward with a suit. So,
exactly.
Give us a suit,
Everybody's out there hunting for Bigfoot. Well, I tell you what, how about you and I get together, we'll form an expedition finding the Bigfoot suit. We'll go to all the, antique stores, maybe the junkyards, old car trunks. We'll look through everything.
Well, think about it.
Let's ask Tom Biscotti.
Yeah, Biscotti.
Biscotti. Oh, I'm sorry. Gosh.
Yeah, we don't have a high opinion of Mr. Biscotti here.
I know.
On his show, and I'd be on there just as a platform, but, he's a character.
That ain't no lie. So, all right, so here's the deal. Let's just suppose that this suit exists in somebody's collection somewhere, some rich person's collection. Let's just assume for a moment that the film is a hoax and the suit exists. Now think about the opportunities if you came out of the closet with that suit. Think about the financial opportunities. They would be great. Yeah, big, 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 huge bucks. I mean, that thing could
sell that suit for several million.
Oh, at least. And that's only the tip of it. I mean, you start looking at lecturing, you start looking at
screenplays,
touring, there's all kinds of stuff that could go. So that really suggests that, that this film is not a hoax. I mean, I agree with pretty much the sentiment here that I lean toward it being genuine.
I do too, but I always have the door open for it being a hoax. It could easily be a hoax. But at the same time, it's not that easy. And if you say it's a hoax, you say it's a monkey suit, well then tell me how it was done.
Yeah.
These people like to say monkey suit and then they run. They don't have any explanations of why the elbow from the shoulder is so enormously long, and that is something that really cannot be faked. People overlook that as well. You were mentioning the arm lengths. It's not just the forearm length, which you could add an extension on, but also what is abnormally long is the elbow length. So
mm-hmm.
if that is a suit, how is that done?
Mm-hmm.
How do you extend the elbow?
That's a good point. With a human in it, how do you get that elbow down there so that it works, with a human?
I mean, they've done pretty good measurements that I'm fairly convinced are scientifically accurate from, just by measuring the rest of the creature in contrast to the actual length of the shoulder to the elbow. And it's abnormally long. And that's something you can do. You can extend your hands, make it wear fake gloves, make the forearms look longer than the area from the shoulder to the elbow. But doing that is, I don't know how you could do it.
So how tall do they figure that creature was in that film?
They estimated, Patterson, I think, originally said he thought it was about 7.5 feet tall. I think Bob Gimlin has come out saying he believed it was at least 6.5 feet tall. A lot of the experts who have done measurements based on the topographical area they're in, based on anything they could use as a relative
mm-hmm.
point, have come up with anywhere to 6.5 to 7 feet, their best estimation. So It obviously was a big creature. It looked big. I mean, just looking at the thing, it doesn't look like a, you know, 5'11", 6-foot tall man in there. It's got to be at least bigger than that. And, you know, Bob Hieronymus, he's not a small guy. He's about 6 foot tall, I think. You know, back then he was a little leaner. So there had to have been a lot of padding if that was a suit and if that was him in the suit. Another thing that I would just like to point out here about the Hieronymus story, one thing he stated that one thing is often overlooked is the amount of money that he claimed that Roger Patterson was going to pay him.
How much?
That's something that he claimed back in 1967, Roger Patterson offered him $1,000 to get in that suit and walk around for a minute. Now, that's a lot of money back then. When the time he made that claim back in the mid to late 90s, that roughly translated about $5,000. Nowadays, it translates to about $8,000 or $9,000.
Hmm.
Now, if you're going to make this claim kind of a retroactive claim, he's almost speaking in modern money, if you think about it. Back in 1967, you could offer somebody $50 to do that, and that would have been a heck of a deal.
But who? I guess what it boils down to is who made the claim? Who was it who made the claim again?
The claim was made by Bob Hieronymus that Roger Patterson offered him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're making up a story nowadays, a lot of times if you're lying, you'll use nowadays terms retro back in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was making up a lie about something in 1967, you know, I'm saying $1,000, throwing that number out. Well, heck, I know people today do that job for $100 in a case of beer, I say on my website.
Yeah, true. True.
About
sadly,
$1,000 is like $8,500 today. Who the heck would offer somebody that much money to walk around in a suit and then believe they would actually get it? It doesn't make sense. Now, if he would have told the tale today and said $100, $200, you know, it makes his story a little more credible. But $1,000 back in 1967?
Well, when did he come forward and tell everybody that? Did he come forward in 1968, 69?
Now, that was actually when did he come out and say that? I think it was past 5 years or so. It wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, I worry about eyewitnesses, and I worry about, you know, memory testimony, because, you know, your people's memories, you know, tends to not be as sharp as they think it is. Same thing with eyewitness testimony. You know?
Exactly. And, you know, why is he coming out now telling us this?
Yeah,
you
that really puts his credibility in question.
Money. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Why are you coming out 30, 40 years later?
Well, controversy. Controversy, you know, drum up business. Yeah, that's all it's about. It's like a show tent.
All right, Jeff, well, we're coming up on the last couple of minutes of the program, and let's get your website out there again. You want to tell people how they can learn more about this?
Yes, it's PattersonFilm.com, and you can learn everything about Patterson Film. It's going to be expanded here shortly. We're going to have more material. I'm currently working on a book about the Patterson Film, which will be very exciting once I get it done. Probably be done by the late part of the end of the year.
Well, great. Well, that's a good deal. And, you know, if you haven't had a chance to visit PattersonFilm.com, go take a look. Jeff's done a real nice job on it. It's got a lot of good information on it. And you can even watch the Patterson film on it. So we really appreciate your time tonight, Jeff. Thanks for coming on and talking about this.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your expertise.
Pleasure, guys.
Yeah,
and
we wish you the best of luck on your site, and I hope it continues to grow.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Yeah, thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
Take care of yourself. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So we've had an interesting discussion tonight about PattersonFilm.com, and go take a look at that. In the beginning of the show, if you've joined us late, we spent a few minutes talking about some of the new things coming around at Paranexus.org, too. I'm not going to repeat them now, but if you missed that, go listen to the archive on this, which should be available shortly after the show. Next week, we have Paul Tate and Andrew, forgive me, his name escapes me at the moment, coming back on sleep paralysis and hauntings, apparitions, and abductions and all that stuff. We barely got them on last week just due to a miscommunication. But they're coming back on. We're looking forward to it. I'll have that information posted on paranexus.org.
Don't miss this one, folks. These guys are very good, and they've really done their homework. So
all right.
You're going to find it fascinating.
Last 10 seconds, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you join us next week. Have a great week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
It's Paranexus Universe.